The following program was produced remotely on Wiliyakali country. We're broadcast across Wurundjeri and Boonwurrung lands of the Kulin Nation via 855 AM and across stolen lands via 3cr.org.au. I'd like to pay my respects to elders, past and present.
That one of my friends has like a million imaginary friends. One of them is called Bob, and there's also one called Chicken Poop, and Donkey Tail, and Ugly Brain, and they're all theys. It's my friends, imaginary friends, friends. I never actually really felt like a boy, to be honest. Like, so I was like, I didn't even know of they, right? So I was just like, I'm a boy, but I never actually felt like a girl or a boy. I'm like, but I have to be one of them.
You're tuned to the Trans Day of Audibility on 3CR. Shout out to Queer in the Air for taking us through the last hour. And this gorgeous little human is Fox.
I'm Fox.
You're Fox?
That's it.
And how old are you?
7.
You're 7? And what grade are you in?
Grade 2.
Grade 2. And can you tell me some of the things that you like?
Well, I like sports, I like tennis, I like running games, I like climbing, I like video games a lot. I like playing board games with my family.
And what's your pronouns, Fox?
They.
My name is Megan Williams. My pronouns are they, them. And I began to understand that I could identify with a gender outside of the boy-girl binary in my mid-20s. And these days, there's a lot of language to help us discover who we are, to express ourselves to the outside world. And leading the way, adopting these new words and experimenting with identity are our uninhibited young people.
I say I'm a they, and they're like, so are you a boy? And I'm like, no. And are you a girl? I'm like, no. And they're like, I'm a they. And they're like, what's a they? And then they're like, it's both. And they're like, oh, okay, I'll be a they then. I don't know why everyone says, okay, I'm going to be a they then once they find out it.
So for this next hour on the Trans Day of Audibility, we're going to be talking about parenting beyond gender. But before we go any further, I want to introduce you to the rest of Fox's family. Fox, how do you know me?
I can't remember.
I love that.
How would you describe Megan to you? Like, who is who?
Friend?
Who are they to you?
A friend.
Yeah. I definitely would consider you to be one of Fox's extra parents, which is how Fox identifies John as well. I'm Fee, and sometimes I go by Wolf, and my pronouns are she, they, and I like mangoes, and I should add that I am Fox's primary parent as well.
Do you associate with the M word?
Oh, yeah, like I'm a mum, but mostly I just use parent, actually, partly because I sort of try to keep away from the binary of like, mom and dad, because it's kind of nuclear and weird for me. Yeah. And, you know, I kind of like to think of Fox as having, like, lots of parents.
I'm John. I use they, them pronouns. I really love playing Exploding Kittens with Fox, and I'm, like, a bonus parent in this family.
So you get it. We're pretty close. Fox gets around in some baggy shorts that usually hang just below the knee. They have long blonde hair that they usually wear out, and a little bit less brushed than their parents would like it to be, but it suits their rockstar vibe. And there's a question they get asked about being who they are that really gets on their nerves.
Mostly it's become a problem when you go to playgrounds and kids are always like, are you a boy or a girl? Like, it's all the time.
I hate that.
All the time. All the time.
And I'm neither. And I was shy. They're like, are you a boy? I'm like, no. Are you a girl? I'm like, no. And they're like, so are you a boy? I'm like, no. I'm like, they.
We didn't always use they, them pronouns for Fox. Before they began to articulate that they identified as a they, we used to refer to them as a he. But at a party last year, during a round of introductions, Fox said they used they, them pronouns. We reflected on what was going on at that time.
Well, it was like pretty much the start of grade one.
Yeah, it was February last year. But, well, around then, like maybe a bit before then as well. But that's the first time that I remember. I know it because it was my friend's birthday.
Fox and I had had some conversations prior to that. Maybe an important takeaway from that was just like how confusing things are, even when you're in a family that is non-nuclear and non-heteronormative, that the kind of socialization that happens outside can still creep in. Because it's like thinking about what my pronoun is versus like what society is saying and juggling that.
And Fox remembers back to when we referred to them with gendered language and how they came to realise that it wasn't how it always had to be.
I never felt like one. I just I have to be a boy. Like, I just, like, everyone says that, so sure, I'll be a boy. Like, but I never actually felt like one. I know this won't make sense, but it wasn't when I found out that John was a they. It wasn't. It just never occurred to me. It only occurred to me when I accidentally kept calling John a boy. Mostly, that just occurred to me that I could be a they.
You know, in the few months, at least a few months in the lead up to them talking about being that using they and identifying with they had said things to me, you know, like, I'm a boy, but I'm a they, because he just never had, like,
initially
had,
yeah,
not felt right. But, you know, when you're a kid and when you're really little and all you hear everywhere is boy, girl, it's like, how do you think outside that? Like, maybe you start hearing different pronouns, but like, how do you then put that together with like what it actually kind of means? So, you know, that's kind of in the background as well before them introducing themselves as a they. It's confusing when you're a kid. It's confusing when you're an adult, like trying to walk that bound, like walk within this world, you know?
It is confusing, but this world is changing. Perhaps slower than we'd like, but it's changing.
If we look at the world at the moment, the language that we offer young people is much greater than what we probably had even 5, 10, 15 years ago.
This is Meryn Wake. I connected with her through the Drummond Street Queer Space. She has extensive experience supporting young people and their families as they work out who they are in this world, with some lived experience of her own.
I work as a LGBTQIA+ child and family practitioner. So I'm also the parent of a almost 14-year-old trans non-binary young person. The way young people describe who they are is very different because they've got some language around it. You know, the terms I've heard over the years is gender not sure. I'm in the middle. Using terms like demi boy, demi girl. At a very young age. So I'd like to be masculine and be a boy, but I don't really feel like one, but I'm more on the side of boy than girl. Non-binary is obviously a term. But little kids are fascinating. They come up with incredible words to use. You know, the one kid I'm thinking of is like, I think 5, you know, I'm in the middle. I'm just in the middle, mum. Like, I'm just, and that's okay. So I think they're offering us language that we never knew. And the way we see it in the practice I do is that I kind of see parents meeting the gender of their child. And a lot of times that will happen. It used to, you know, we used to have a lot of young people who would come out at 16, 17, 18, kind of independent. I'm a, you know, becoming an independent thinker. I want to think about my role in the world. Now we're seeing kids pre-puberty. So 8, 9, 7, 10, 12 going, hang on a minute. I haven't hit puberty yet. So I'm not sure what my gender is, but it doesn't feel, when people call me she, it doesn't feel right. So we've opened up the questioning space, I think, is what I see a lot more, and what that, and that means very different things for very, very different people.
Yeah. Yeah. And is five kind of the youngest? Like, could you see expression and identity? Like, I mean, I can certainly remember back in kindergarten, like boys versus girls activities, like children can associate with gender perhaps before they can speak, right?
Yes. Like, yeah. And I think that's the thing about, that, you know, we talk about gender being a social construct, that, you know, even the gender, what gender is a social construct. A girl should be this, a boy should be this. You know, we have socially constructed that. So, no, we've got, I know kids of as young as 2 and 3 who will come to their parents and say, I don't want this part of my body. I don't want this. I want to be like you, mum, not like dad. Or I am, you know, really clearly I can think of one kid who's 4 now, probably about, so maybe at 3, said, what, stop calling me a boy, I'm not a boy, I'm a girl, and has socially transitioned since and gone to kinder, started play school, preschool as their affirmed gender of a girl. So I think when we, and lots of times you'll have conversations about, well, they're too young to know, do they even know what a girl and boy is? Well, actually, and I say to parents, well, actually, they don't, but we offer them the, like we tell them a girl is this. So for them to be saying to us, no, I'm not that, it's not them choosing, it's us, it's them kind of challenging what we're telling them they are, which, you know, and then obviously that can fluctuate and change. You know, a kid can be, you know, I know with my own child when they came out as trans, they were very binary in their nature. They went from, I'm assigned female, I need to be a boy. I want to be as boy, as blue, as everything that defines a boy I want to be. Now they would describe themselves as trans, not binary, because they don't have to present or express themselves as what a boy should be, but they still use he and they pronouns because that fits them better. So with questioning, unfortunately for parents, comes uncertainty. And as parents, we like certainty. We like, tell us what you need, we'll fix it, we'll, you know. And I guess also as parents and as carers, we only know gender from our own experience. So I know what it means to me to be female, and if my child's questioning who they are as a female, male, or whatever gender they identify as, then I don't have an experience to go by. I'm kind of meeting it new. You know, what do you mean you're non-binary? Like, what does that feel like? How does that, what does that mean in the world? And often the conversation will then straight away lead to, what toilet do you need? Honestly, we talk about toilets all the time. It just always comes back to toilets.
It does make me giggle, but access to a safe and hygienic place to relieve yourself, whether in public, at work, or at school, is a really basic human need. We often hear about the stress this causes people, but there's no universal experience.
When my child went to high school, the teacher was amazing. He goes, I don't get this, but I'm learning, open to learning. They had spent so long, the teacher team, working out this toilet that Jay could use, like that wasn't a disabled toilet. It was kind of a teacher, but they could use it. And the first week he rang me and went, we're a bit confused. Like, Jay's going to the boys' toilets. And they were like, we've spent so long planning this. And I was like, yeah, because Jay's a boy. Like, there's no point in Jay's mind. That was back then when they were very kind of binary. There's no reason why he wouldn't. Like, that in his mind, that's where he belongs. And I said to him, this is the difference, understanding the T as an acronym and who my child is. Yes, they're trans, but it doesn't mean that every trans kid needs a neutral space. Having choices is a really important part of this, and having, you know, individual, like building, if we built buildings again or built schools again, you're having individual cubicles in a bathroom would support so much, not just trans and gender diverse kids. Like, you know, the toilets are a minefield for all sorts of stuff.
For Fox, at 7 years old, access to the girls' toilets in the yard at school comes with a level of privilege that they think others see as an advantage, and a reason other kids have started identifying as a they as well.
I can go in the girls' toilets at school, and I think that's why people are going, like, to do that. But, like, I'm like, I don't use that advantage because I don't see that sort of...
Yeah, it's not an advantage. It's just, like, going to the toilet.
Yeah, but sometimes people go on it so people can't get them.
Oh, right. Like in Chasey or something.
Yeah, and so they want to be able to do that. But, like, even if I could do that, I wouldn't.
Mm.
Because, like, I mainly use it as a, as like a Chasey, like, if you don't do it, then I'll use it, but I actually never will. I just do it to get people out. But, like...
So, but does it work? Like, if you're chasing a girl and she runs into the toilet, then you...
It always works.
Like, I'm going to get you.
It always works. Well, I do it, and then I just hide, and then they come out, and, like, okay, it's safe, and I just pop out of them. I never will actually do it, because I just... I don't want to get in trouble, because it's not like any girl will believe me on that.
Right. Right. You think if you... used that, maybe you wouldn't be allowed to use the girls' toilets anymore. Is that
like if I used that, I just wouldn't be able to. I don't think any girl would believe it, like why I'm saying it. And either way, like I've got a toilet, so why use this other toilet?
Yeah, and because you think they might say you're cheating if you do that.
Well, no, I'm not talking about the game, I mean, in general. If I go on there, like other random people who go on there will think, oh, why is there a boy? Why is there a boy in there?
Yeah. And they so you don't use the girls' toilet at all?
I never used it. I'm like, I don't feel like very safe using it. Like, I feel like it's rude to do that. It would be rude to do that. I'm like, I'm a they, so I can do this thing that you can't do. Like, I don't.
Yeah, because that's not why you're a they.
I'm a they because I feel like it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't use it because it's an advantage. Like, I just do it because I feel like one.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
It's hard working out who you are, finding where you fit in this world. You can hear me agreeing with Fox. We are who we are. We don't do it for any other reason. But this conversation, it did make me wonder. How much is Fox coming up against social rules and weird distinctions we make in order to define people by their gender? And how much of this is normal childhood development? Meryn Wake from Queer Space had some perspective to share.
How much do we pathologise and how much do we just put down to normal child development? And I think this goes back to the first point about language is that, you know, people say all the time to me, is this like more common? Are we talking about it more? You know, the whole debate around gender whisperers in school, are they telling kids they're like this? I liked your example of one kid saying they and a whole lot of kids around them going, oh, my God, yeah, I want to be they too. Like, I'm going to use that. And then coming home and the parent going, well, where'd you hear that? Oh, my friend's they. And I, you know, and being able to go as a parent, okay, let's, I don't know, try that for a while, see what happens. Like, particularly if you're talking about children who are very young who aren't going to access any kind of medical model. It's not about a medical model transition until a kid hits puberty. Like, so really at a younger age, it is part of childhood development, you know, who am I, where do I fit in the world, particularly at around that that kind of 9 to 11 year old, which we know is a time where kids' brains start to think, who am I outside of my role as a child? Like, who am I not as a daughter or son or a child, but who am I as a friend, as an individual? Who do I love? Who do I like? What do I like to do? How do I show up in the world? That's a really key developmental time. So it is completely normal to go, why wouldn't they be questioning this? Because this is what the world should be.
You're listening to the Trans Day of Audibility on 3CR. This is Parenting Beyond Gender, and we'll be back after this.
Do you have a few children's picture books or footy boots that your kids have outgrown but want to find them a loving home? Well, drop them in at 3CR and put them in the Books and Boots bin. Books and Boots regularly sends pre-loved children's picture books and sports footwear to remote and regional First Nations communities and children across the country. Contact us at Books and Boots or go to the website www.booksandboots.org.au. We love a good book.
Luciano and Georgia Keats, supported by the Australian Queer Archive, present Queerways, retracing Melbourne's queer footprint. Queerways is a community art project that maps the queer history of Melbourne, combining our community's stories and voices, past and present, into a permanent, interactive record of being queer in Melbourne. Visit www.queerways.melbourne now to record your story in queer history and explore our city's untold history. Queerways, a 3CR supporter.
You're back on 3CR. My name is Megan Williams, and you're listening to a special feature I've made for the Trans Day of Audibility. So far, we've heard from 7-year-old Fox and their parents on how they came to identify as a they and adopt they-them pronouns. And we've had some additional insights from Merrin Wake, who's a child and family practitioner at the Drummond Street Queer Space. And now I want to introduce you to Jamie, who's another very special young person, and he's recently updated his pronouns.
We've had a pretty recent change in our house. So just this week, Jamie has felt confident or secure in the new change of changing from they, them pronouns to he, him pronouns.
That's Jamie's parent, Tara. Jamie's almost 12, and his pronouns still catch Tara out on occasion. So in this next bit, forgive us, there's going to be some misgendering. I know this can be triggering for some people, but it's also a chance to remember that even the most loving and supportive parents still take time to adjust. Jamie remembers back to when he first realised that he wanted to change his pronouns.
I'd always been there, but I never really realised I could just use those pronouns. Like, it was that easy. Even before I was, like, aware of it. Things like the whole binary terms and how much it was used in like just day-to-day life really annoyed me a lot. And then it slowly began to think that like it annoyed when people used it for me.
Jamie had a very supportive experience when he took this decision to Tara.
It wasn't a hard thing to do. I think it was just like, I want to use they, them pronouns. It wasn't like something that made me nervous or...
I have a pretty distinctive memory of it because I was standing in front of the stove. I was probably making spaghetti because normally I'm making spaghetti. And I think this is exactly what they said. They said, I've been thinking about it and I think they, them pronouns are the best fit for me. And that was it.
I asked Jamie if there are any labels that he feels are right to describe him. And what helped him identify with them?
I used a non-binary for a long time, although now I'm questioning it a lot and I'm still figuring it out. However, I use he, him pronouns and I'm figuring out what my gender is currently.
Well, I think there's a lot of people a lot older than you also figuring that stuff out. It's a whole life process. Yeah. So, yeah. And I guess it's also something that can change over time.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, do you feel like it's something for you that has changed over time, or do you think you're learning new words and finding that those new words fit you better?
I think it's definitely changed over time. For a while when I was younger, I was definitely confident that I was a female, that I used she, her pronouns. And then I slowly realized how it didn't really suit anymore. And then I've been like trying, I used they, them for quite a while, I would say a few years. And now I'm still changing again. It's all about just like figuring out when it starts to feel wrong and then thinking of something new.
And is there certain events that have happened that, you know, or moments when you're like, oh, this has changed for me now, you know, like where there's kind of just this light bulb moment that it's like, you know, like I've been on a path of change and now I'm ready to, you know, use different words. Like, can you talk to me about that?
I think recently what made me start to think I want to use he, him pronouns, I was with some family, my cousin and my cousin's brother, who was also trans, and how he had used they, them for a while before he decided to use he, him pronouns. And I think that was a big thing for me because at the time I was non-binary and use they, them pronouns. I think it was just a big, like, I think I relate to that a lot, and then it made me realise it.
Jamie and Tara have gone down the path of seeking medical support. Tara explains.
So we got a referral to the gender clinic at the Royal Children's Hospital shortly after Jamie spoke about using non-binary pronouns, and it did take a bit of time to get in. It has a long waiting list at the gender clinic, and Jamie was actually triaged because of their age. So in our experience at the gender clinic, it's been both consultation with both Jamie and I, and for one of the conversations, their other parent as well, his other parent. And we've just spoken about options around medical, psychological, and other support around basically changes in their body and whether they align with their gendered identity and what the options are to receive support and intervention. Yeah.
Merin Wake, the LGBTIQA+ child and family practitioner at Queer Space, spoke to me about going on puberty blockers.
There's kind of no real medical intervention until some sign of puberty hits. So you've got to be past a certain, so there's about four stages of puberty. I think, if I'm right, you've got to be up to about stage one or two before you can start blocking puberty. So you've got to almost have started before you can stop it, but then you can't be too far past two. So if you're up to puberty level 3 or 4, you then can't block it.
But for Jamie, puberty blockers didn't work out.
So because of Jamie's age, they were triaged. He was triaged, and that was sort of midway through last year. So he had the initial consultation, and based on their it is really new, just by the way. Yeah, so based on his age and based on your account of where you were at in your gendered identity, the decision was made to triage. But unfortunately, there is still such a long waiting time because there's such a high demand for these services. By the time we were actually able to engage in the services, puberty blockers became much less of a safe option.
And puberty blockers aren't the only option. Merin explains in more detail the full range of medical care, even when the brief window of opportunity to take puberty blockers has passed.
That's not to say that you can't do things like, you know, suppress menstruation, stop hair growth, you know, like things like that can be used. But so the treatments, if you like, are around the symptomatic treatment. So I don't want a period anymore. I don't want, you know, things like to do with mood and contraceptive pill. But these are medications that are used. They're not new. They're just being used in a different, you know, doctors know them. So often when I hear from doctors say, oh, I don't really get this, I'm like, yes, you do. You've been prescribing period blockers for 20 years. Like, don't tell me you don't get it. You know what the medication does and you know how to manage it. Don't put it around the gender identity. Just work with the person, you know. Yes, they're yes, they're male. Yes, they're assigned female. So work with what they need to be them. So then we go to puberty blockers, which is something that can only be offered pre-puberty. So at like, well, kind of when puberty starts. So you kind of turn up, get an assessment. You need quite a significant multidisciplinary assessment for that to be done. So it's not something you can turn up to the GP and get. At the moment, the Royal Children's Hospital in Victoria is only one of the gender clinics. There are clinics around the country that do this. It's very hard to access puberty blockers without that multidisciplinary team, and lots of GPs, psychologists, things like that, for an under 18-year-old won't go near it. Will go, I don't feel, even though puberty blockers is reversible. So as soon as you stop the blocking it, you go into the puberty of your biological sex. But what we know is that, and this is what the team do, is to be able to diagnose gender dysphoria and understand that the risk of not blocking puberty, so the risk of that child developing, say, breasts, periods, whatever, if that's female puberty, has such a detrimental effect on these young people that to give them a medication to buy them time that is reversible is the best, you know, that's kind of the best practice. Not for every kid either. This is the other thing I say to parents, like their kids comes out and goes, oh, I think I might be he. And they're like, oh, quick. All right, we need to block people. Like the kid, you don't have to be, you're not more trans if you block, like it's this kind of like, oh, no, hang on, well, they must need that. And I'm like, well, have you asked them? Maybe it doesn't matter to them whether they grow, like they can still identify as he. Like it's not an if, it's not a, like it's not yes or no answer, you know. And then you go on to, so then as you get older, kind of 16, then they talk about hormone therapy, which is also, which becomes an irreversible, not all of it, but parts of it's irreversible. So that's when we have to have conversations with, say, 11 to, say a kid starts puberty at 10 or 11, goes on blockers, is on blockers for 2-3 years, then they start to have conversations around, is this still your identity? Do you still feel like this? What do you want? All the way along the way, they say to people, kids, if you want to out of this at any time, feel free. Like this isn't a start here and end here. And then they can start talking about hormones and about hormone treatment. Again, under 18 is a really hard thing to access because a lot of there's a model in the medical model called the informed consent model, which is only for 18 and over. And that's where you – it's just kind of a general practice of medicine. You know, you want a treatment from me as the doctor, I need to make sure that you're – you know, that you've got, you can offer consent, that you understand what you're talking about, that you've got competence to be able to like make medical decisions. You know, we do it all the time in healthcare. So the informed consent model over 18 makes it much, it's still not easy, it's hard, but there's a thing of GPs being able to do that. Whereas under 18, very different access to it and difficult to get because as we know, gender clinics start, massive waiting lists mean kids are put on before puberty, miss out on blockers because the waiting list is so big.
Even though Jamie has a really supportive environment at home and lots of supportive family and friends, not everybody has been accepting of who they are.
There were a few girls in my class who weren't very supportive of the idea of using different pronouns. And we're definitely like mirroring their parents in a way. And I talked to my teacher about it because she was a very supportive person I thought I could go to. And we set up a conference thing at lunch where I got to talk to everyone and just say how it was like not all right. I feel like so many people have grown up in a space where it's very heteronormative and kids don't understand it as much as I think they should, or like taught about it or had the opportunity to talk, like know about things.
As we offer our young people language, I think unfortunately what we're doing is we're asking our kids to tell us who they are, but we're not setting them up in systems that to support them. We don't have healthcare access. We don't have education systems. You know, we don't have policies. We don't have. So it's kind of a double-edged sword that we're wanting to say to our kids, hey, tell us who you are. Use different pronouns. Oh, but by the way, when you go out in the world, you're not allowed to, or you're not okay, or you're not normal, or you're not right, or you're not. So in some ways, we're doing a bit of a disservice, I think, by not doing the other work we need to learn. And also, I guess the biggest thing for me is often our kids are the educators of their world, which they shouldn't. A growing child who's developing in their brain and body shouldn't have to explain to the world every day what that means. You know, they should be able to just live their lives, be who they are, offer a voice to their experience, absolutely, but they shouldn't have to educate the world.
Jamie's carried the burden of educating the community around him. And watching this has influenced Tara's decision-making about where they want to be.
You know, so we live up in the Yarra Valley, and our experience up here predominantly has been that most people have been positive in hearing about pronoun usage and being approached and us to change their language in how they talk about Jamie. And when we brought it up at the school, the initial response, like Safe Schools, has been amazing. So that was really positive initially, but it wasn't backed up. So people will respond positively, but then continue to misgender, continue to use the wrong pronouns, regardless of being pulled up and corrected. And that sort of created this division between how people express their support and the actions that they take. And some of those people have also done the work to become more used to and using different pronouns that they weren't familiar with. And I can understand that there can be a bit of a timely process in that if that's the first time that you've been presented with different pronoun usage. But that's also really shaped our decision-making around high school, and we're planning to move out of the Yarra Valley and into the inner city in the hopes of finding a high school that just perhaps has more, you know, exposure culture and protocol around gender diversity. And part of that decision for me has been, even though I'm incredibly proud of Jamie and their strength, facilitation and advocacy, I don't want them to have to continuously be on the front line throughout their childhood and teenagehood. And I understand that I don't have the complete power to remove them from that front line, but that as their parent, I need to continuously be looking at the environments that they're exposed to and maximize as much as I can that their gendered identity isn't this unique, isolated experience for the people they are surrounded by.
This is Parenting Beyond Gender, a special production for 3CR's Trans Day of Audibility. We'll be back.
The Commons Social Change Library is an online collection of educational resources for those campaigning for social change. It collects, curates, and distributes the key lessons and resources of progressive movements around Australia and across the globe. The library includes over 500 resources covering campaign strategy, community organising, activist history, digital campaigning, diversity and inclusion, and much, much more. It's free to access the library, so check out the collection at www.commonslibrary.org. Common Social Change Library is a 3CR supporter.
There are many ways that you can keep up to date with 3CR news, events and programs. With Facebook stripping content, it's a timely reminder to focus on the communication channels and platforms that the community controls. The 3CR website is a great spot to catch all your shows via audio on demand or scroll through our range of podcasts. It's also where you can sign up to our monthly newsletter, buy yourself a new t-shirt, or check out archival audio from past broadcasts. Of course, we're also on Twitter at 3CR and Instagram at 3CR Melbourne. But don't forget our mighty AM band. Catch us anytime on 855 AM. Keep in touch. 3cr.org.au.
You're listening to 3CR's Trans Day of Audibility. My name is Megan Williams, and this is Parenting Beyond Gender. We've been listening to stories from young people Fox and Jamie on their experiences at school and in the community while they explore who they are. For this final part of the show, we'll be hearing from their parents and their concerns despite their best efforts in this imperfect world. But first, Merin Wake from QueerSpace is going to spell out some of the fears and anxieties she commonly hears in her work as a child and family practitioner.
The language that's being offered to it is, I think, what's creating fear and anxiety. What do you mean you want to change your name? And often I hear from extended family, like grandparents or other parents, like if there's shared care or siblings or aunties or uncles, saying, oh my God, if you start down this route, that means you're going to end up on, you know, medical transition. And we're like, no, it doesn't mean that. It just means holding space for the young person to question.
And also, so what if it does?
Absolutely. And that's the other point, is that, you know what, it doesn't, it's going to be whatever it is going to be. And I think when kids come out, or as we call it, like we have this big thing in QueerSpace where we talk about inviting in as opposed to coming out, and that often parents will say to me, oh, I need to talk to the school about them coming out. And I often say to parents, first of all, coming out isn't a one-off event. It's not just one time in your life you go, hey, guess what, and then never do it again. It's a constant thing.
Another concern shared by both Fox and Jamie's parents was the fear of others judging their parenting for creating space for their child to experiment with their identity.
Even though I feel so grateful and happy that Jamie's experience is growing up, being surrounded by a community that is, you know, queer, gender diverse, non-conventional, conventional, and lots of other things, in navigating some of the more mainstream spaces in our lives, I've been incredibly conscious that that can be used to gaslight children's identities, as in you're just doing that because, you know, the adults in your life are reflecting those sorts of choices or pathways and really being quite dismissive or belittling the coming out.
I was super self-conscious of that too with Fox, as in my adoption of their pronouns was quite slow because I just was like, okay, they're five, I'm just gonna like lay low and see, like, does this change next week or I don't know. And so in terms of the change, I did feel really self-conscious that people were going to like be judging my parenting or me or something, you know, and that it was something I had like made happen. And I guess I had created a space for it to happen by sort of not by using non-gendered language and, you know, socialization and cultural stuff as much as I could when Fox was little. In fact, our funny story is that, you know, at one point when Fox was 3 or 4 or something and they did something and I was like, oh, good boy. And Fox's jaw hit the ground and was just like, what? Like, I'm not a dog. Like, you never say that, you know, like they'd never heard it. I was always just like, clever duck or, you know.
Funny stories aside, it's a very real and legitimate feeling shared by a lot of parents of gender diverse kids.
With this program, The Village, we're seeing a lot more queer parents coming with queer kids, whereas before it was probably predominantly kind of cis heterosexual parents coming with their gender diverse kids. But now we've got a lot of, and I even had, like, I'm cisgendered, but when my child came out, how many people, including family members, went, of course it's your kid, you told them, because I'm in the work. And I'm like, did I just create a safe space to allow the language? Like, but that was even back at me, and I'm not even, so I can't imagine what that's like being a trans parent going, oh my God, you must have that leaped on you so much, you know, only work in the space and they think I force them into it, let alone using the pronoun myself, you know, like, yeah, I can't imagine that. But I see that more and more because we're seeing a lot more queer parents coming with queer kids, you know, that, and that's a lot of that's unpacking their own experience of being trans and gender diverse. What does that mean for them? What was it like growing up? What does that, how did that feel? But yet they've got this freedom of this 5-year-old just wanting to tell the world. And that parent going, hang on a minute, that's not how this goes. Like, I remember it not being like that. And yeah, so that's, you know, it's when we meet our kids' gender, we only have the experience we have, whether that's one of cisgendered or trans or gender diverse, to go off. And it's not the same experience that our kids are experiencing, that's for sure.
A few months into that process, I guess, of my slow adoption, you know, there, John and Fox are playing a game and I was sort of sitting close by and I referred to Fox as they in our conversation, and Fox stopped playing the game and said, Mom, you use my correct pronouns. That's so good. And I was in there going, geez, okay. I'm locking it in, you know, like you're positively reinforcing my use of having used they, like, which it's not like they had been mentioning it, that it had bothered them that I wasn't or anything like that. But yeah, they just were really like, well done, Mum, you know, that's great. And I was like, okay, got it. And I think that one of the things that kind of makes that challenging and still can make that challenging is like when I have to refer to Fox, other people. And I do use they, and, you know, like let's say in a work setting or my colleagues, I'll use they, but it's just, I feel like it's harder with extended family and things like that, because it's just like, I just want to have a conversation and tell you what's happening in their life without having to sort of stop and intervene and, you know, teach you about that pronoun or that they're identifying as, you know, because I actually want to talk about the topic I'm talking about and I don't want it to be derailed or something. And then like all their mind is going to be thinking about is, you know, whatever their opinion or thoughts are about Fox's choice of pronouns or gender identity. So it's sort of annoying, I guess, that it kind of has to like take up so much airtime.
And the complex code switching, I think, around references to correct gender and pronouns, which can be a bit of a process at the start of like, you know, where is your child comfortable to assert and be in their correct gender and pronoun usage, and where are they not, and complex family dynamics, etc. So and I'm definitely, you know, we did have a moment last year where I referenced this, and Jamie just turned around and said to me, well, how do you think it feels for me? And I thought that was a really strong point. So I'm definitely not trying to center my experience in this, but just sort of the complexity of, you know, when you're speaking to some people, you might not have told them about the change of name, and that's been directed by your kid that they don't want that name changed to be used in that space yet. But then how, I mean, and this bit is just like small, but like sometimes that can be confusing. And so you can end up being the one who misgenders your kid or misnames your kid because you are constantly switching and being conscious of the environment and the people that you're talking about your child with and how you should be referring to them if it's an unsafe space for them to be in their correct gender or using their correct name. Yeah.
But yeah, Fox has talked about how, like, you know, when there's teams at school and sports, they get split into based on, like, presumed gender, and Fox is really uncomfortable with that and was telling us the other day about how one of the teachers, maybe the PE teacher or something, was like, oh, you're on that side, you know, and because you're a boy. And Fox is like, I'm not a boy. And it was this conversation that they'd had, and, you know, we've, like, talked to the wellbeing people at the school around how important it is, like sometime last year maybe.
Yeah, they have a good sort of protocol there where all the teachers from all the different areas are, like, told, and there's blah, blah, blah.
So, like, they've kind
of had this. But this teacher also said, well, you look like a boy, so go with the boys.
Yeah, and so this is, like, yeah, it still happens for Fox as well. Like, they're pretty deep on the language stuff as well. And, you know, they are always pinpointing examples around how there's just no representation in media or very little, and, like, how that's hard for them as well. So,
yeah, and, you know, definitely at certain points when they've been really struggling, you know, at accommodation where there was binary toilets for a week, and this then 6-year-old coming out with, like, why should I have to go to a toilet that's for disabled people? That's for disabled people? That toilet's for disabled people, you know, and really, you know, making really valid points, like, even in fairly, like, culturally safe pockets or spheres of, like, Melbourne, for example, and Melbourne more broadly is a fairly, you know, relatively culturally safe pocket of Australia, or, you know, that even in that setting, that that's sort of something they have to contend with and battle, and that they feel it on that level really deeply in a way where I, as an adult maybe, who's kind of just, like, socialized and grown up in that world, yeah, I experienced that really differently, you know. And even though I feel fairly aware of those issues, Fox, you know, it's just crying and saying, you don't understand, Mom, like, you don't understand, you know, you just don't. It was really like, wow, okay, well, I really don't. And yeah.
I told Maren from Queer Space about this story and asked her what you should say to a child that's going through something that, as a parent, you can't understand.
I think you're exactly right. It's validating the fact that you're right, that I don't know. I have no experience of that. I don't know, understand what that means. But I think it's also that we don't fixate on the certainty of that. Hang on, well, I don't know, so now I need to know. Well, you may never know. You know, and I say to parents, like, you know, they're saying, oh, I just don't get it, or my kids come out as she, her, and now they want they, them, and I've just got my head around she, and how do I do they, and da, da, da. And I'm like, you know what, you probably won't, and that's okay. But your role, like, you might not understand the experience, but your role as a parent is to respect and love your child, so therefore get the pronoun, learn, find out what it means, find out. You won't know what it feels like, and that's really hard. That's a really hard place for parents to sit with this holding space of questioning and uncertainty. And what naturally we do as parents want certainty, you know, protection. And I think lumped on top of that is the narrative we hear around us, is the statistics. When your child comes out and you hear a statistic of, you know, trans kids are 11 times more likely to take their lives, all you feel is that, oh my God, you've just told me this and now this means this. But actually what we know is that those statistics have nothing to do with the kid's identity and everything to do with the world around them. And we know statistically that families, whatever that looks like, if you can get support around a young person, we know the outcomes will fall away. You know, I've seen kids become the biggest success they've had every opportunity in their lives because we've surrounded them with support. So those statistics no longer, you know, sit because, yeah. So it's really powerful to have, use family as a much broader term, not necessarily just parents, but just adult support can be profound, yeah. and can save. And I always say this saves lives. Like that literally is what it will do. It will save lives, not just make our kids happy, which hopefully happy and, you know, but yeah, it does save lives. Yeah.
You're listening to the Trans Day of Audibility on 3CR. My name is Megan Williams, pronouns they, them, and I really hope you've enjoyed this special program. One of the themes that was really common speaking to my guests was the lack of gender diverse people and stories represented in the media. So big thanks to 3CR for putting on this special day of broadcasting. If there's a young person in your life, or you know someone supporting a young person grapple with their gender identity, please share this program. Go to 3cr.org.au/Trans Day of Audibility 2022 to listen back and to check out all the other wonderful programming that's happening today. I'd like to thank all of my guests today, 7-year-old Fox and their parents, 12-year-old Jamie and his mum Tara, and LGBTIQ child and family practitioner at the Drummond Street Queer Space, Meryn Wake. The music for this show was by French non-binary producer In Love with a Ghost. Stay tuned for a special episode of Sweet Dreams.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.